welcome to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. Sam is off today, but I'm Becky Friedman. I'm your host in the studio with Meredith and Bridget. How are you guys?
Doing great.
Doing pretty good. Pretty good.
So it is in the middle of a lot of holiday times right now. We had some Thanksgiving about 2 weeks ago. We've got some various, you know, Christian related or originated, but secular in nature and secularly
appropriated
observed.
Pagan holiday season.
Exactly. Coming up. And we just had our humanist and atheist solstice celebration, which means the celebration of the forthcoming solstice, of course, because, you know, how space rentals go in during, you know, December. It's hard to do that. And it was really, really nice. It was really fun. Super festive, really decorative. Bridget, you were there with me.
It was really fun. We had a good turnout. The food was really good. Everybody was in high spirits. It was wonderful.
And it's kind of interesting to think about, you know, atheists coming together during the holidays. But, you know, a lot of people don't realize that we do those kinds of things. Sometimes we suffer along with religious family members, and sometimes we gather on our own to just celebrate that kind of spirit. And the fact that, hey, you know what, we're marking the turn of the seasons, and that the solstice is something that is not religious in nature, that literally in nature.
Yeah.
Right. And right. And it's something that we can use to mark cycles and mark time and appreciate those around us.
And to celebrate not dying in the winter and actually having food to eat. And yeah.
I like all those things.
And having housing and being warm and surrounded by family.
Well, if you are a non-religious individual and you want to tell us about your holiday observances, go ahead and email us at questions@atheist.radio or drop us a voicemail at 844-SKEPTIC. That is toll free. We'd love to hear from you. Do you just eschew all of the things, or do you come together with other religious family members, maybe some interfaith family members, maybe some non-religious, maybe some folks that are not Christian that you invite to a Christmas thing, maybe some folks that are not Jewish that you go to a Hanukkah party and you play dreidel and you have latkes and things like that? Let us know, because, you know, people need to see that, you know, atheists aren't about just sitting and not enjoying each other's company and marking the seasons. And this actually brings us down to some news. Down to Australia.
The lamb down under.
Oh, did you say land or lamb?
Lamb.
Ah, I think you've been reading ahead in the notes.
Oops. Spoilers.
Australia's Advertising Standards Bureau has yanked a TV commercial advertising lamb as a unifying and inclusive meat option. The ad features characters and representatives of many world religions sharing a meal together that includes lamb. Some Hindus were offended by the depiction of Ganesha, an important elephant-faced deity who was shown partaking in the meal and being teased by Buddha. Advertising standards in Australia do ban commercials that discriminate against or vilify people. Meat and Livestock Australia, the creator of the You Never Lamb Alone campaign, insisted that their intention was never to offend, but in fact to highlight the ability of meals to unite Australians of differing religious and spiritual orientations. I saw this ad probably, I think it was back in the spring. I think it initially came out around Easter time.
Yeah, it was a while ago originally, I think.
And it was really cool from an atheist perspective, because the host, guess what? She was not of any religion. And it was really neat to say, hey, this is something, you guys are all so picky with your dietary needs. This is something that we can all kind of agree on and come together. And that was really neat to see someone that was of no religion basically just saying, hey, we can come together and have a meal. So it was celebrated by a lot of atheists or a lot of non-religious folks. But lately, right, this fall for us and spring for Aussies, it really stirred some controversy and came up with underneath the advertising standards. It was either deemed to have been discriminatory or vilifying. So what was your sense of this in watching this ad?
For me, it didn't seem offensive. I mean, the joke was basically Buddha saying, are we going to talk about the elephant in the room? Referring to Ganesha. And it's like, oh, okay. Like, it's not maybe in the best taste, but I don't necessarily think it's offensive.
Well, how do the other table, other folks, other deities and characters of the table react? And how does Ganesha react in this long commercial?
They kind of chuckled, and then Ganesha was like, it wasn't funny 2,000 years ago. It's not funny now. And so, there was the banter.
Lighthearted humor.
Yeah.
Is that the kind of things that you would see around a family table about some of that you know, sibling teasing?
Yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, kind of playful.
We do that here as crew to Ask an Atheist, that sort of lighthearted ribbing and poking at things. So it's not like, it's not an out of the question sort of thing to have friends or family come around and do that. And that's sort of the feeling that they were trying to evoke in this commercial. And it was, I mean, people are going to be offended by any number of things. So,
yeah.
I really, really like the commercial. There's a lot of characters.
Yeah, I did too.
And it's really fun to sort of watch it over and over again and try of your own accord to try and pick out all of the different characters and deities. And
that was really
fun. So who did you guys see in this ad?
Well, the Jedi made me laugh crazy. That was great.
Yeah. And why? So we know why a Jedi is included in terms of representatives of the world's religions, or at least in this case,
Australia.
Because
there's a Jedi Knight religion.
Yeah.
Right.
Uh huh.
There are people who follow it.
Right? I think it started in the UK on the census when they didn't want to put down, you know, Church of England or something, and it got enough a registrants on their census that it had to be included no longer in the others, right? It got disaggregated and listed as its own thing. I think it really popularized it at that point.
I do like how they incorporated Muhammad without giving his image. He had to work or something, and so he was calling in.
Yeah, daycare pickup,
yep.
Did they say?
Oh, yeah, daycare.
Late, picking up, you know, kids at daycare.
Yeah.
So you hear a reference to him as if he's talking on the cell phone.
But not depicting him. So that's a nice attempt.
So that avoided discriminatory or vilification kind of practices.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think that there are probably some atheists that would argue that even depicting Muhammad would not be vilification of Muslims.
No, yeah.
But we know that it's a very sensitive.
Yeah. It's a sign of respect and trying to accommodate their religious beliefs. And I thought that was a nice way to incorporate them without being offensive.
And exactly. And if you're trying to sell lamb, I mean, that's a huge swath of your population that would really be keen on buying this kind of product. So you wouldn't want to alienate them.
Right.
Maybe if it was explicitly an atheistic ad, who maybe are a little antagonistic towards, you know, religions or want to poke, you know, you might have something a little bit different. But it wasn't surprising to me that they eliminated Muhammad's image from this particular ad.
Right.
So what other deities did you guys spot?
L. Ron Hubbard.
Yes.
So the first go around, when they first show him, I'm like, who is that odd sailor at the table? And then I'm like, Oh. Because he starts trying to push his Scientology on people.
Like, don't talk religion.
Yeah, that was another fun part when he tries pushing his Scientology.
Uh-huh, and they're like, don't talk religion at the table, come on.
And it's kind of funny because it's obvious there that everybody has very strong religious beliefs because they are representatives from the religion. They're kind of stand-in from the people, but it's a totally diverse group.
And you've got Aphrodite getting all of her Tinder messages.
Oh, is she swiping left or right on these?
It was just a bunch of hearts.
Yeah, she doesn't want to deal with that right now. She just turned her phone over. We've all been there.
Was it Zeus that was like, how do I get one of those? I can't remember which
deity it was. What kind of emoji did he get?
Oh, the eggplant.
Oh,
yeah,
he didn't know what it meant.
Well, it clearly just means, you know, an aubergine, you know, wonderful vegetable.
Absolutely.
That you can.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right, Becky.
And so you also had the Buddha, because Buddha was the Chinese representation of the fat Buddha, right?
Right.
That was teasing Ganesha. You had what I think I saw a Dionysus. Right? Sort of enjoying his wine.
Yes. And Jesus with the reverse miracle. Turning wine into water. I thought that was classy.
And why would he turn wine into water?
I couldn't remember. Was it
Aphrodite was the designated driver, so she wasn't drinking.
Oh, so promoting, you know, responsible consumption and safety and watching out for your fellow, you know, dinner guests and things like that. That's kind of cool. Some of the ones that are less well known that I spotted was Yoruba Orisha Oba. That's sort of the Orishas are different deities that sometimes are associated with some of the saints. So that's from West African religions that then came into Afro-Caribbean and Afro-Brazilian. Sort of syncretic beliefs. You had the mute Chinese goddess Chang'e, and
taking pictures of her food. That was the best. She was Instagramming.
She has more Instagram followers than anyone.
Oh, so she's a completely visual. Right. Since she's all, okay, mute. Uh-huh. So very nice incorporation into modern times. You have one of the Shinto kami, the Shinto character deities. So that was Amaterasu. I believe she is associated with sun. With the sun, and we saw her there. But you also had, next to L. Ron Hubbard, did you guys catch who was sitting next to him?
Let's see.
Zeno, his alien friend.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I did see Zeno.
And then Thor was there, too.
Okay, yeah. You had Confucius as well. Yep. Mm-hmm. So also incorporating, many people think, well, Confucianism is a philosophical tradition, maybe akin to religion, sometimes, considered religious, sometimes not considered a religion, more, philosophical. And you had, of course, that no religious host.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, if you're able to say, hey, let's serve lamb here and try and just like have a nice dinner, do you think that the outrage on the part of Hindu individuals in Australia might have something to do with many Hindus being vegetarian and using lamb sort of as a unifying factor is sort of diluting one of the core tenets and beliefs of and practices of Hinduism?
That was something that we were talking about when we first watched it, was like, isn't Ganesha supposed to be vegetarian?
We know that.
Why would they be eating lamb? Mm-hmm. So that is the one good point where it could be seen as, as I guess, not even vilifying, but incorrect.
Yeah.
Information.
So just a misrepresentation of, of how this is. So, I think that the Advertising Standards Board, banning this particular commercial, I would say that that's a heavy-handed approach from, from the government saying that this is, unacceptable. And I would say that there's a difference between being offensive and vilifying a people or discriminating against a people. But I'm also very careful about that. We know that when you have something that is depicting a group of people or a belief in a caricaturized way or in an incorrect way, it can enhance or flare discriminatory inclinations of individuals. So I'm sensitive to that kind of process. But at the same time, I'm going to kind of include this under what we call in at Ask an Atheist and the horse you rode in on, which is generally our call against sort of censorship in terms of blasphemy, right? Because we have many, many countries and governments around the world that have these anti-blasphemy laws. To say, and in many of our non-Muslim majority countries, these blasphemy laws take the form of you cannot do anything that's offensive to religious sensibilities. And we know that merely practicing one religion is offensive to the sensibilities of another religion.
Yeah. Right.
Merely being an atheist is blasphemous to other religions in different ways. And so in order to actually have a religiously pluralistic society, you can't have these blasphemy laws. It's required to blaspheme in order to allow individuals to practice their religious tenets and beliefs. So I'm gonna have this fall under our blasphemy things. And, Aussies, let us know how this actually played out. Are we just getting the brunt of the news media? Was this a very small thing? Was this a widely appreciated commercial? Was it seen to be in poor taste by any other religious folks? What's going on there? And, maybe to our local listeners, we hope that you, too, can have a religiously pluralistic and wonderful Thanksgiving, Christmas, holiday, solstice, everything.
Appropriated pagan holiday season.
Thank you. There we go. Should we stay around in Australia? In the land down under?
Oh, we're going to go to the land this time instead of the lamb.
We're done with lamb, as yummy as it is, because we've got some amazing things to celebrate.
Yay!
Yay!
After an overwhelming approval from Parliament and a final signature from Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull, American leaders are so apt to say, Trumbull. No, Malcolm Turnbull. Australia has finally legalized gay marriage on Friday. Same-sex couples married overseas will now be legally recognized as married under Australian law on Saturday. So this has already happened. And couples seeking a new marriage must give one calendar month's notice, making weddings legal as of January 9th. The Attorney General's Department has also issued an updated form for couples intent on marrying with new gender options for male and female and X, with X, not EX, like your former, you know, person, but X defined as indeterminate, intersex, or unspecified, as well as the option to list your spouse as partner in addition to bride or bridegroom.
Lots of changes there.
That's amazing.
Well done, Australia. Right? Congratulations. So this has been, I think, a long time coming for Aussies, mm-hmm. who we see a lot of similarities in terms of cultural things, in terms of diversity, in terms of issues between diverse groups of people in Australia. We see a lot of that mirrored in the United States, sort of a similar kind of cultural background or shared cultural history. And it seems that Australia has been really, really resistant to adopting marriage equality in a way that other Commonwealth countries, you know, from the British Empire have moved along with, and the way that, you know, the United States has really moved along with. So I think that it's been such a long time coming, and we know that what I think is going to be really important is how the marriage vows, how the legal marriage vows right. will change.
Yeah,
because we know from our friend Shelley, who's been on the show, that says that, you know, in your marriage vows, you had to have said that you recognize that marriage is between one man and one woman,
and to the exclusion of all others as well. So eliminating the possibility of having any sort of polyamorous type relationships within your marriage as well. So let's see if that changes too.
I don't know if they're going to be steamrolling ahead of all of the other countries and just going real quick with it. I mean,
why
we know
not?
Malta did that, right? Malta,
yeah.
As of, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, didn't even allow divorce, and they just jumped right ahead at a pace that was kind of unprecedented. Now legalizing marriage equality there too. So not all is well, though, with regards to marriage equality. Not everyone is saying hooray, yay, you know, jumping for joy. And one of those is Australian MP Bob Catter. Have you guys ever heard of this individual?
I have not.
No.
I can't believe as atheists this hasn't come across our radar before, based on what he's saying now, because it seems like this is the type of guy who would be ranting and raving against all sorts of things secular and gay and queer and everything.
Kind of excited to hear what he has to say so I can take him down.
All right. Brace yourselves, guys. Australian MP Bob Catter went on a bizarre rant against homosexuality in light of his parliament's overwhelming passage of marriage equality laws. Among Catter's assertions were that a gay conspiracy had covered up the HIV-related murders of 72 children who received blood donations.
What?
My eyes
there's
just
more.
Did a full 360.
Oh no.
Among his assertions are that homosexuality had only been around for less than a century, and he had 3.5 million years on his side.
Okay.
He said that gay people were more likely to commit crimes due to it being a quote DNA thing.
Wow, that's a very scientific explanation.
And that marriage equality would, quote, mess with the heads of teen boys since it would allow them to wear dresses at school.
What?
Those things aren't even related.
Not even close.
So, actually, I don't think that it was that it would allow them to wear dresses at school. As soon as marriage equality passes, we're going to have boys that are made to wear dresses as uniforms.
Oh, being
or something.
Forced to wear dresses. Oh, goodness.
He also seemed to suggest that Australia's high juvenile male suicide rate was the fault of gay people.
Oh. Or maybe the straight people who are discriminating against the gay people.
Yeah, maybe Australia needs to have advertising standards that doesn't discriminate against or vilify people based on sexuality.
Maybe,
right?
Yeah, maybe.
That would do a good thing. So a fellow parliamentarian actually interrupted the end of Catter's tirade. This was a 15-minute speech he gave.
How did somebody let this?
Right?
But how? It was great. It was sit down, Bob. This is rubbish. And after substantial backlash from the public and other elected officials, Catter maintained that he'd made his point and added that when a religion has a sanction on something, there's a good reason for it.
Oh,
really?
Oh,
really?
So argumentum ad religium, right? So what, argument to a religious authority here?
Yeah, appeal to religious authority.
there's a good, you know, man, there's a religion that says you can't eat beef. There's a good reason for it.
There's or shellfish, which, I mean, I guess at the time there probably was a good reason to avoid
I'm talking
shellfish,
right now about his Australian Hindu constituents.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
Is there a good reason not to eat beef and lamb in your country, sir? You know, yeah. Mr. Cattard? And seriously, bringing up old arguments about, linking HIV with gay folks and saying, oh, they thought that
blood.
Equality in giving blood donations was more important than saving lives of children, and they murdered 72 children. How inflammatory can you get in this age? 2017, Mr. Cattard.
It's almost 2018.
And, oh, no. And
move
that,
on.
That, you know, a DNA thing, appealing to science, thinking that your bigotry is going to be passed over and approved of just because you mentioned the word DNA and 3.5 million years, right? Yeah. I mean, it's a true fact that all of us came from heterosexual couples. All of us developed from heterosexual couples, completely ignoring the important roles in nature and societies, both human and in non-human organisms, that non-reproductive individuals play in terms of child rearing and group cohesion and altruistic working together,
right? And guess what, people who are not heterosexual can also still have children. Sexuality is fluid. It's exactly. not a strict thing. It can change as people change. So
So I don't know if this guy means that he's going to be on his way out. Oh, wait, I forgot one of the funniest things.
Oh, good.
Earlier, when a lot of this stuff was being talked about, was being debated and things like that, we had the plebiscite vote in Australia that asked, the general populace, what's your opinion on marriage equality, which also overwhelmingly passed.
Yes.
Yep.
He was laughing and said, I think that we should leave this issue behind. What was his more pressing issue that he really wanted Parliament to talk about?
I don't know.
The fact that once a month, people in Queensland, in rural Queensland, get torn apart by crocodiles.
Oh.
What's more important than, all of your people in your country having basic equality? We can't possibly grant equality to people while there are still crocodiles attacks.
It's a totally different issue. It's possible.
Maybe he's worried that the crocodiles
at the same time
are attacking because they were forced to wear dresses to primary
to school.
Oh.
I mean, I think Steve Irwin would be rolling over in his grave over that comment.
He'd be crying some crocodile tears.
Yeah.
Well, I hope that Bob Catter gets to cry his crocodile tears when someone votes him out of office.
Yes,
please.
I don't think that Australia needs him. I don't think they need his blathering on about gay conspiracies and ridiculous
people
things like that.
People whose beliefs are that backwards and debunked and wrong and old just shouldn't be in power anymore.
He's just going to die mad about it. It's fine.
Okay. You know who's also mad about this, guys? A straight couple who is highly religious in Australia, but they are just about as effective as Bob Catter's rants. So Nick and Sarah Jensen had publicly promised in 2015 to get divorced if gay marriage became legal in Australia, stating they refuse to recognize the government's regulation of marriage if its definition includes the solemnization of same-sex couples. But as it turns out, divorcing your marriage from the government is a bit harder than they anticipated. The Family Law Act states that the only grounds for divorce are irrevocable differences and that a couple must be separated for 12 months prior to filing. A lawyer from Sydney even offered to represent them pro bono, citing they will have a difficult case since they plan to continue living together in their, quote, marriage. However, their tune quickly changed once marriage equality became legal, and they will not be going through with their planned divorce.
Oh, no.
Wait,
you mean that two dudes being able to get married, or two women being able to get married, or two people of indeterminate intersex gender being able to get married
doesn't actually
your family
anything
whatsoever?
Shocker. It's almost like that's what we've been telling you the entire time.
So, Meredith, you actually found a quote here from them, because you've been following the story since 2015, right?
Yeah, I've been following this.
And these are highly religious individuals?
They're very religious. They believe that their union, their marriage is, under God, ordained by God. God grants the rights to a man and a woman and should never be anything other than that. But yeah, so they said they're going to get divorced.
Okay.
But now it's hard to get divorced because they obviously don't really want to. They're just like, yeah, we want to do the motions and go through it.
But like, they actually had said that we're going to continue living together.
Yeah,
right?
they explicitly say that they want to continue living their life as normal, but just not be married.
Which is kind of precludes you Australia. Being able to get divorced.
Right, right.
So
anyway, they've come out with this
they've come out?
Wrong words. Sorry. They have made a statement. So I guess they found him right after the vote was for equality, and they found the guy, and he's made one statement. And he says, when asked if they're actually going to get divorced, "My previous public comments regarding civil divorce never envisaged me separating from my wife, but rather our marriage from the state. The legislation currently makes it untenable for us to do this under the law. The point we are highlighting and still stands, however, is the fact that a redefinition of marriage changes the agreement under which we were originally married. We will be making no further comment."
Oh, so this actually is evidence that it changes their agreement, because the agreement that they made, they had to say marriage is between one man and one woman to the exclusion of all others. So we have verification then that is changed. That agreement is changed. Well done, Australia. And not very well done, Nick and Sarah, who didn't really think this through, it seems. And yeah.
A lot of backpedaling for a lot of crying.
Wait.
Just because it's hard.
Seriously religious people, like, backpedaling? I don't.
Well, when they find out,
when does that happen?
That never happens.
When they find out that actually, you know, your marriage and however you want to practice your union with your partner, it's not affected by other people's different ways of doing it. And I think even within, if they were to look, even within their own religion, I would bet that even within their own evangelical faith, they would find different configurations of how marriage is practiced. It might be between one man and one woman, sure, but the way that those kinds of relationships and marriages are realized within the context of that family is going to differ from every couple. And, you know, I'm just really glad that Australia, that the state has decided, hey, you know what, we're not going to be in the business of regulating what happens between couples. And we're just so happy for Australia. Yay. This is Ask an Atheist. You got comments? Email us at atheist.radio or give us a voicemail at 844-SKEPTIC.
Radio Tacoma.
KTAHLP 101.9 FM.
Hello, and welcome back to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. Sam is on break again today, but we've still got me, Becky Friedman, and Meredith and Bridget in the room with me. How are you girls?
Doing great.
Doing pretty good.
Girls, women, ladies, people of the female persuasion, of the biological, female-bodied sector of society. Yes. We've got an awesome, somewhat related interview coming up today, right now. I'm really excited to welcome Lilith Starr. She's the chapter head of the Satanic Temple of Seattle, and she joins us today via Skype to tell us about the temple's activities, including, oh my God, guys, I'm so excited about this, including the Men Straighten with Satan campaign.
Yes.
Lilith, you joining us via Skype. Welcome back to the show. We're so glad to have you.
Thank you so much for having me on.
So first of all, before we get to this Men Straighten with Satan campaign, the word Satanist really can strike fear in many folks that are unfamiliar with your beliefs and practices. Can you give us an overview of what it means to be a member of the Satanic Temple?
Certainly. So the Satanic Temple is an international religious organization. We have over 100,000 people worldwide. And we're a non-theistic religion, which means we don't have any supernatural beliefs at all. So we don't believe in God. We don't believe in Satan. We believe in science as our best way to understand the world. And instead of believing in or worshiping Satan, for us, Satan is a literary figure that embodies rebellion against tyranny. And our belief set centers on core values like compassion and empathy and justice. And the justice part of it, that kind of inspires us to go out in the world and do activism on the behalf of other people's rights and our rights. So that's kind of what we're about.
That's great. But a question I've always had is, if you don't believe in a supernatural force or deity, why do you view Satanism within the temple to be a religion?
Well, we don't believe that, all the good things about religion have to be thrown away if we throw away the supernatural belief part. So our religion provides us a narrative, a shared narrative that we can use to sort of understand our lives, and a shared sense of ethics. We have our seven tenets. And it also provides a community. So for a lot of us, this is just like any other religious community where we have potlucks, we have social occasions, we get together for holidays, you know, that sort of thing. So in a lot of senses, it gives us the meaning and culture and community that any other religion would give you.
Lilith, you mentioned the seven tenets, and I love them, and they seem really, really similar to some of the principles of secular humanism. What makes a Satanist different from a secular humanist?
Well, the biggest difference is in our view of Satan. For us, Satan is at the top of our symbology heap. The story of his rebellion against an unjust God, that really informs our beliefs and our approach to the world. Whereas secular humanism, of course, you don't have that. You don't have that focus on Satan as a literary figure. So that's probably the biggest one. Also, we're not really interested in becoming mainstream. So people ask us, why do you use Satan when if you just were humanists, people would listen to your message a lot more? But actually, we find as Satanists that, people pay attention when we enter the public sphere in a way that you wouldn't necessarily get with humanism.
We've definitely seen that in the Puget Sound region when, you're present at, Pride marches and, protesting, Christian prayers on football fields and, doing after school programs down here in Tacoma. So I can definitely see that it's definitely an attention getting, title and affiliation.
I definitely have to appreciate the theatrics behind it. It really does make a very clear statement of what you're trying to do and getting that attention across. And I really admire and respect that.
Well, thank you. Yeah. For us, it's one way that we're super effective. We're the ultimate test in religious plurality. If you're going to let Christian prayers into the government or into public schools, then the ultimate test would be, well, do you also allow the Satanists come in and do their stuff? So it really pushes that boundary of plurality in a way where a lot of times you see the hypocrisy that, Christian prayer and like a Christian nativity scene is fine in the government, but once you let the Satanists in, it's kind of the nuclear option. And in a lot of cases, they'll take out all religion rather than let us in. Which is fine because, that way, it's not just us that is being taken out. It's all religion.
Right. So you do a lot of like activism work dealing with that kind of plurality of religion. Tell us a little bit about your new campaign. This doesn't sound exactly like that. Men Straighten with Satan. What is going on here?
Yeah. So this is the current campaign that we're working on. It's not an activism campaign so much as a community service campaign. So, like any religion or a lot of religions, we want to give back to our community and help those who are in need. So our Men Straighten with Satan campaign has been it's been done around the country. It started in Boston, the Boston chapter. TSD Arizona also did it. But basically what we're doing is we're collecting menstruation supplies for the needy, for the homeless, for women living in women's shelters. You know, we're also trying to destigmatize this as well, because, you know, you think of a lot of things that you're going to donate for the homeless or the needy, like food or clothes. But a lot of times, you know, it doesn't occur to people that people in need can't afford menstruation supplies either. You know, it's sort of been shamed into not being discussed. So, you know, by doing this campaign, we want to call attention to that and kind of destigmatize that in kind of a fun way. You know, the title is Menstruating with Satan, and we recognize there's a bit of humor there. But we really want to, you know, help people pay attention to this issue, to help them, help those that can't afford menstruation supplies.
So why do you think menstruation historically and socially has been linked with the devil or Satan, kind of going so far to be as referred to as like the curse? Obviously, there's a connection there. What's your take on that?
Oh, certainly. Well, we see, you know, through the ages, anything having to do with women's sexuality has been demonized. You know, women's sexuality itself has been demonized. That was something that a lot of the witches were accused of. You know, not only having their own sexuality, but also helping other women with, say, you know, their reproductive care. So just like abortion has been demonized, birth control has been demonized, you know, this very real and, you know, necessary thing that happens to women has been kind of shunted into that same pile where these are things that polite, godly people don't talk about, even though they're a reality for half the population, basically. So I think it's been swept under the rug with the rest of female reproductive rights in some ways.
Definitely. We're all just like nodding our heads in agreement. Like, yes.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, we know.
We understand.
Nope. From a, you know, my personal interface with this, I work at a high school with high needs. About more than half of our students come from backgrounds that qualify them for free or reduced school lunch. And, you know, realizing that I think it was about 6 years ago that I started stocking pads and tampons and period supplies in my classroom to, one, try and destigmatize it. It's in the same drawer as all the Band-Aids and the cough drops. And so, you know, boys open up that drawer, too, and look at it. And it's there because that's a reality for, you know, half the people in their lives. And also realizing that you can't buy period supplies with food stamps. You can't use EBT for that. And to have about 6 years ago, a girl say that she will miss 2 days of school a month on the heaviest days of her cycle, rather than risk being at school and not having, you know, adequate hygiene supplies. That to me broke my heart, because we're in the United States. We're in a public school environment, you know, where we're trying to get kids to have, you know, great attendance to attend and all those kinds of things. And there have been lots of awareness campaigns in, you know, developing nations where the onset of menstruation typically means that girls stop going to school because there's not adequate hygiene. But that it's happening right here in our region, and that that's something that, you know, a 14, 15, 16 year old girl would have a difficult time expressing. And you know, only learning that halfway through her sophomore year, it really motivated me to say, hey, you know what, we need to be providing these kinds of things if we want to, as, you know, as educators or as skeptical thinkers or critical thinkers that want a, you know, an educated populace, this should be the lowest barrier to having kids in school. So I really appreciate it from that perspective, too.
That's really nice of you, because it really is heartbreaking when people can't go to school, they can't go to a job. You know, if you have to stay home, you miss out on life. So thank you for doing that. That's really nice.
Well, thank you for spearheading the donation campaign. It runs actually well into January. So what's the angle on actually extending it past the typical holiday giving season?
We just wanted to make sure that people had the entire month of December to do that. Also, people are going to be in the stores, possibly returning gifts afterwards. So we wanted to kind of piggyback on that. And also, it's, you know, it's the winter. We just want to make sure that the needy have what they need.
Okay. And what sorts of products are you accepting?
We're accepting pads, panty liners, tampons, reusable menstrual cups, and wet wipes. So kind of the whole range there.
What are some of the drop-off locations that people can take these items to if they would like to donate to the campaign?
We have a number of businesses that are hosting our collection boxes. In fact, we have one down there in Tacoma. Destiny City Comics has a box out. Yeah. And that's actually been getting a lot of donations. So go Tacoma. Awesome. We have one at Bedlam Coffee in downtown Seattle. And we have one at Hellbent Brewing Company in Lake City.
Oh, nice link up with their brewing name, Hellbent. Okay, great.
Figured they might be willing to host one of them. And then we have a couple tattoo places on Capitol Hill. We have Social Skins Tattoo and Artful Dodger Tattoo and Comics. So, you know, some different places around town.
And what organizations are these products going to be going to, like shelters and are there specific places?
Yes, there are. We're donated some of it to HopeLink, which they do a lot of different things to help people, but they certainly help homeless women. Also, Cascade Women's Program and the Hammond House Women's Program we're also donating to.
So I noticed that when Arizona and Boston did their Menstruating with Satan campaigns, that there was a lot of talk of this so-called tampon tax. Do you know anything about the tampon tax and how it might affect us in Washington state?
Yeah, certainly. So, you know, you talked about menstrual products not being able to be bought with EBT. You know, it's sort of injury upon insult that you also still have to pay tax on tampons and pads and those supplies, even though they're a necessity, just as much as food is a necessity. Yet there's still this tax that people have to pay, you know, whereas you would think that if it's something this essential, like food, that we would not have that tax on there, because it's basically penalizing women for having to have their periods.
So as the Satanic Temple typically does activism as well as the public service and community service campaigns and involvement, is there anything on the horizon in terms of the Satanic Temple trying to undo these tampon taxes across the states?
No, we haven't checked into that yet, but you know, that's a really good suggestion. So I'm going to make that suggestion and see if anything comes of it. Cause you know, it is really something that we'd be concerned with, just as we're concerned with, you know, making sure the needy have supplies. So yeah, that's a good suggestion. I'm going to check that out.
And is there anything coming up in 2018 for the Satanic Temple? Any sorts of rallies or events that you might be having?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we'll be at Seattle Pride with supportive signs next to, you know, the Bible thumpers who are there spewing hate. We're going to be there with signs promoting love and acceptance. We are also going to be at Tacoma Pride. We'll have a booth there. And this year we're also talking about going down to Olympia Pride. So we'll probably be at all three of those Pride festivals. And then on August 4th, we have a great big benefit show for reproductive rights. So half the proceeds from that is going to go into our National Reproductive Rights Lawsuit Fund that's right now fighting a lawsuit in Missouri for reproductive rights.
Right. Can you tell us at all about that lawsuit? What is that sort of focus on?
Certainly. So that lawsuit is on behalf of Mary Doe, who is a Satanic Temple member. And Missouri has extremely strict abortion regulations that are basically just thrown up there to, you know, make it super hard for women to get the care that she wants. So this woman was subjected to, she had to travel 800 miles and pay for a hotel for 3 days while she waited for her 72-hour waiting period to go by. She was also made to read medical literature that was completely inaccurate.
So not medical literature then?
Propaganda. Inaccurate medical literature, which violates our belief that, you know, our understanding of the world should conform to our best scientific understanding. And there's, you know, this was completely false medical information linking abortions to breast cancer, you know, that kind of thing.
The kind of propaganda that doesn't persist in any kind of, or doesn't hold up in any kind of study. Is that, right, that kind of stuff? That we see that across different states. I'm really glad that in Washington state we don't have those kinds of laws, but it is something really important to be aware of, that there are individuals and groups that will try and push these kinds of things to be said to women to just access reproductive care.
Right? Yeah, to just get, you know, the care they need. So, you know, our lawsuit alleges that our plaintiff's religious beliefs were violated. Her belief in, you know, scientific accuracy of literature. Also, our third tenet is one's body is inviolable, subject to one's own will alone. And the courts have ruled that the opinion that, you know, that a fetus is an actual whole person is a religious opinion and not a scientific one. So in our religious opinion, you know, a fetus is still part of the woman's body, and that body is inviolable according to our tenets. So that's the other part of that lawsuit, is the third tenet.
Wow, really, really interesting things that we'll keep an eye out for in 2018. And you have a fundraiser going on in August for that in a national level. But I think you have an event coming up tomorrow or later this week.
Yes. So Tuesday, there's a Morgan, who's a burlesque producer in Seattle, she's dedicating her Cabaret of Evil show on Tuesday, December 12th, to this Menstruating with Satan campaign. So she's asking,
Are there still tickets available to that?
Oh, absolutely. It's at Substation in Seattle. Would you like any of the information for that?
Yeah, sure. Where can our listeners follow up and see about getting tickets to that and supporting the campaign while getting entertained?
You can visit our website at thesatanictempleseattle.com, and there'll be a link to that event. So yeah, we would love to have people come out and enjoy the show, you know, bring some donations. Also, it's a pay what you can show, so it's affordable for everyone. And yeah, come out and see some burlesque, and all the door proceeds are going to go to the Menstruating with Satan campaign as well. So you can bring donations, you know, you can give a donation at the door, and that'll go to this campaign. So,
and we can find you. We can find you on Twitter and Facebook and all other social media as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just search for the Satanic Temple Seattle, and you'll find it.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. Lilith Starr is chapter head of the Satanic Temple of Seattle. She was joining us to talk about some of the temple's activities, including the Menstruating with Satan campaign, gathering feminine hygiene supplies for needy women and girls in our area. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me on. You guys have a great day.
This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, or questions at atheist.radio. Give us a voicemail or an email. Becky and Bridget and Meredith are all with you today, and we will be back after the break. Hello, and welcome back to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. Sam's still on break, but you've got me, Becky, and Bridget and Meredith in the studio. And, you know, we've got some kind of local things, not super local to us in the Puget Sound area, but in Tri-Cities. This year, the crew and co-hosts of Ask an Atheist will be special guests at the Tri-City Freethinker Solstice Celebration. We'll update about our plans as they unfold. You can go to tricityfreethinkers.org or find them on meetup.com, but expect a full production team. So we'll all be there, and Bridget, you're tagging along and going to be talking to some folks about some social things as well.
Yeah.
I'm excited. We'll hopefully be able to go over the pass.
Yeah, and, hopefully.
Pray for no snow. Wait. Don't pray for it. Wait. I'm doing this wrong.
Meredith.
Bad atheist, Meredith. Bad.
So you can also go to Ask an Atheist. So, excuse me. You can also go to atheist.radio. That is our newest domain. And so .radio is one of those new top level domains that came in to play here. So atheist.radio. You can learn more about what we do at Ask an Atheist and, you know, how to keep our lights on and support us in our production and things like that. Well, we've been to Australia. We've been super local with our good deeds here. Let's go a little bit national, a little bit away from the West Coast, all the way over to, well, I don't know, Kentucky.
All right. Yeah.
Start in Kentucky.
We can head south. Yeah.
So a Rowan County, Kentucky man who was initially denied a marriage license by County Clerk Kim Davis is now running to unseat her. Davis came to the forefront of Christian bigotry 2 years ago after refusing to issue marriage licenses to gay couples in Kentucky. David Ermold filed official paperwork last week citing the current political administration as a catalyst for his move from English professor to public servant. Ermold is calling for more integrity in politics, encouraging politicians to embrace the diversity within our community. So we know that Kim Davis was motivated by her religious convictions to say, I will disobey the law to bar gay folks from getting married.
Under God's authority is what she thought she had.
Yes.
Last I checked, actually, when you do become a public servant, most of the time they do ask you to declare that, you know, God is helping you and so that you might be under this authority. So I don't know. We'll have to see if Mr. Ermold gets elected. You know, would he say, so help me God? Would he swear in on a Bible? Would he take his oath of public office on that?
I mean, it doesn't say that he's non-religious. It's just saying that he's, you know, saying people should do their job that they were hired for without that religious implication. I think you can do both. I think most people do both. But, you know, I love that this is such a good example of democracy in action.
It really is. This story, I was reading it and when he says that the current political climate and administration is his catalyst for change, I feel you. I'm there.
So it's neat also to hear about, because I think there's a figure that says that 30% of local elections actually go uncontested. So there's a really neat aspect to this also, where you have, you know, people running for those smaller offices. These are the parks commissioners and the school board members and county clerks. And 30% of those nationwide go uncontested because it can be expensive to run a campaign, or a lot of work to get your name out there. I think that this is probably an effective way of getting your name out there. If you've got, you know, if you were the victim of the incumbent's discrimination. So I think that's an interesting thing to watch. And I'm wondering if there's any kind of other local elections that are finding these kinds of candidates being motivated to run.
But I also really like that he had to go to Kim Davis to fill out the paperwork to run against her.
Oh, there's a little
special level of
a little bit of a snark there. Yeah. But oh,
so from those small local elections to, well, a larger and more meaningful election, a widely circulated image of an Alabama church reader board with the message, "They falsely accused Jesus, vote Roy Moore," wasn't actually photoshopped or fake news, but was actually on display for at least 2 days. According to church officials at Living Way Ministries in Opelika, Alabama, quote, several people had access to the sign, and it was not the pastor who had put up the message. It was ultimately taken down after an online backlash calling for them to lose their tax-exempt status for endorsing a political candidate. So,
I mean, just
help me understand this, guys. I mean,
Roy Moore and Jesus are not in the same
playing
field, and just gross.
Yeah.
So it came across my social media feed, and I, you know, people look at church reader boards, especially if you have friends that are kind of a little bit irreverent or atheists, and, you know, photoshopping church reader boards is kind of a funny little,
it is funny,
you know, eye poking activity.
Well, it's a funny eye poking activity until the Russian bots take over Leftbook and start propagating memes.
Well, and sometimes you don't even have to Photoshop them. They're sometimes inadvertently funny that they post like certain things, like my personal favorite is the most powerful position is on your knees. And from their perspective, of course, it's, you know, prayer. But from a slightly more irreverent position, it's like, oh, that's dirty.
Oh, dear. So was this then, you know, it was just kind of astounding to see that it wasn't actually photoshopped, and that a church would be so, you know, misinformed to say, hey, I'm going to explicitly endorse a political candidate, which you can't do as a church. And so I think that there was a lot of backlash against that, because this is explicitly forbidden thanks to the Johnson Amendment. And it brings up a really good issue right now, which is that in the current battles over tax reform, the Johnson Amendment is sort of under threat. This is the amendment passed under President Johnson that said, if you're going to be a 501c3, if you're going to be a nonprofit church, you cannot get those tax breaks while also endorsing political candidates. And I think that that's really important to preserve. And this church wasn't really interested, or the rogue individual who apparently had keys to the reader board wasn't really interested in preserving that. But here's a really funny thing. This reader board was real. It wasn't fake news. It wasn't photoshopped. But I want to talk for a minute about how this is portrayed in the news.
Yeah.
Because it came across my, you know, social media just as a picture. And then a little bit later on, when it got taken down, after, you know, when the reader board got taken down after that backlash, there was an article that appeared in my news feed, and it said, church attacked for its reader board. Now, when you think churches being attacked, you know, what do you guys think
of? Gun violence.
Angry mob with pitchforks throwing stones to the windows and maybe setting it on fire.
Right. This is there's a history in our nation of, you know, African American churches being firebombed. That's a real thing. When you say a church is attacked, or when you see Muslim, you know, mosques attacked by a different denomination of Islam, like, you think people are being violent and destructive.
And in recent weeks, days, there have been churches who have been shot upon during services in this country. So it's not something that's outside of the realm of possibility to have actual churches being attacked.
So here's the thing. I clicked on the link that said church attacked. And then when I went to the actual page, it said church comes under fire. Now, under fire obviously comes from, the metaphor of gunfire, but it has become a metaphor for that, you know, verbal criticism, right?
Rapid fire sort of criticism.
So so we go from something that suggests violence and destruction to under fire, which is just really a lot of, you know, verbal criticism. You read the article. What's the actual occurrence? Deluged with angry phone calls. Oh, our phone is ringing off the hook.
Oh, no.
So it's almost like the media is spinning this to make it look worse.
Yeah. What? And it was
very, doesn't do that.
It was very disturbing to me to see how this is portrayed, because you should not have the church as the sympathetic character in this story. They're violating their tax code and tax laws.
Right.
And they're offending, on top of that, you know, loads and loads of victims of child molestation, Christians who actually hold, their Jesus to be something of good repute. And the church is not one to be sympathized in this case on any angle here. And when you suggest that a church receiving angry phone calls and just not being able to do their secretarial business is somehow akin to, you know, being firebombed, or shot in,
right?
It's really irresponsible. So, hey guys, I'm going to call out Newsweek on this and say, Newsweek, you're kind of garbage on this reporting.
A little bit.
Agreed.
So don't attack churches. Go ahead and verbally criticize them for breaking the law and being tasteless in their comparisons of folks who openly flout the law and are proud to do so in the name of their religion.
And also, they need to pay taxes now because they broke the law and that tax exemption has been revoked.
Regardless of who had the keys to the
sign. It doesn't matter. Right?
Yeah, it's tough stuff that I think this church is going to need to learn, but tougher stuff also that the media is going to need to learn in terms of how you portray these things.
And if the media can't learn that, we need to start actually reading articles and not just headlines.
Not just headlines.
Yeah, no. Absolutely.
Because think of all the people that will see that and think that maybe a church actually literally got attacked without reading it.
It's important things to do your homework, kids.
Yes, Miss Friedman.
Well, this has been Ask an Atheist. I'm really glad that you guys could join me today, Meredith and Bridget.
Yay, thanks.
Happy to be here.
And thank you to Lilith Starr of the Satanic Temple of Seattle. Go to askanatheist.tv or more recently, atheist.radio to follow up with some of our goings on. Our music is by Chris Coleman and Phil Whitfield. We'll see you guys next week and in the Tri-Cities. You can tweet us at AskAnAtheistWA. Find us on Facebook. Happy holidays. I think that went awesome.
That was great.
Yeah, that was really good.
It had a very natural flow.
Yeah.
You hear that, Dan?
Can that be our... Can that please be our episode title? It has a natural flow.